going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right, another edition of the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett. I love to go deep on all things growing sport, and there's various ways to do that: advertising, marketing, representation, certainly. But the digital space is a huge way to do that, and that's what the NHL is doing right now. And this is going to be a NHL-centric episode, just letting you know right now. So tell a friend to tell a friend, pass this along to your hockey heads, because the NHL is growing it in a couple of ways with collaboration, I should mention, with the NHLPA. And we're going to talk about that in terms of some grassroots growth initiatives later on in the episode. But first, we're going to do it in terms of growing the game in the digital space. And you may have heard, but the NHL, NHLPA, and the NHL Alumni Association, all three parties combined, have been working with Sweet to deliver a new era in sports digital collectibles with a product they have called NHL Breakaway. Now, what that is a fan-focused approach to bring millions of NHL fans around the world together digitally. Sweet, if you don't know, is a leading platform for gamified digital collectible experiences. And the functionality means that you can go in and collect, trade, view great plays, great games. Essentially, imagine you had a virtual trading card, which allowed you to store all your favorite highlights and moments from the NHL, both present and past. I think my biggest question around this is not where we are now, because NFTs certainly have exploded and somewhat leveled off, but where are we going? What's the future? How do leagues show up in these digital spaces in a way that they can serve their current clientele, but potentially grow their clientele, knowing that the sensibilities, the wants, the needs for their fans is appreciably different depending on where they are in their life journey, but where they are in the world? That is the task for my next guest on Going Deep. Tom Mazzone from Sweet.
Tom Mazzone, founder and CEO of Sweet.
And Chris Golier from the NHL.
Chris Golier, Group Vice President of Innovation at the National Hockey League.
So I got them on the line together to talk to them about NHL Breakaway, the problem that it solves, and the opportunity it presents for the league in the future. Let's go deep. Well, one, congratulations, because I know this has been a lot of work over a long period of time. And so now that it's in market, you get to benefit from the fruits of the labor. But I just want to go back. Digital collectibles designed and customized specifically for hockey and for the NHL. Why do you feel there was a need? What did the market say in terms of the opportunity?
Yeah, I can start. And first of all, very, very great to meet you. So I'm Tom Mazzone, founder and CEO of Sweet. But, I always use a football analogy. I'm going to try to use a hockey analogy here, right? We're in the very early beginning of the first period of digital collectibles. And, a few years ago, blockchain presented an incredible opportunity for the whole collectibles market to move digital, right? In a way that was authentic and in many ways, like, better than physical memorabilia. And, if you see the opportunity for consumers and what this type of digital version of what we all love, right? Whether it's hockey cards, baseball cards, sign memorabilia can do on the social side, on the gamified side, on the connecting of fan side. It's an extremely great opportunity, right, for fans to come together. And it's very, very early days, right? And so we just saw an opportunity. There's a lot of alignment with the NHL and sort of a vision for the platform, right? And how can you engage broader consumer bases? How do you let people experience the sport in a way that maybe they couldn't experience prior? And spent a lot of time with the league, really in the PA and the alumni, putting together what I think is a very world-class opportunity for hockey fans. So very early days, right? Everyone likes to say, oh, like, you know, you were late to the game. No, there's been some numbers as high as like the whole digital collectible space just in the sports vertical going to like $60-70 billion market size, right? By call it 2032. So it's really, really early days. However, what I liked about the NHL's approach is really focusing on the consumer engagement side of this, right? And I'm sure we're going to get a little bit more into the product, but that's really the way we've set this up. Experience the sport that you love in a way that you never have before, and do it in a way that's allowing for interactions with other like-minded fans. And that's what NHL Berkeley is all about.
Donovan, I'm Chris Golier, Group Vice President of Innovation at the National Hockey League. And so we like Sweet because they thought through that fan engagement experience. This is a marketplace, but it's more than that. And we've seen trends of younger fans who've come and embraced the league and our game in so many different ways. So you've been covering our sport. You understand that, you know, youth initiative wise, we've got a lot of different things that we test and we trial. And so Big City Greens is a great example of, you know, a new way to look at the game, right? You know, it's an alt broadcast that appeals to a much younger demographic. Roblox, we launched a game on Roblox. We think that this, you know, appeals to an NHL fan, certainly a collector, right? Collectibles is native to sport. But the way that Sweet and we at the league are approaching this is to gamify, you know, your experience. So it's trading with, it's collecting with a community of people that wake up every day and think about, you know, the iconic moments and plays in the history of our sport. So we're portraying our sport, and we're looking at it through a different lens that we haven't done before directly to our fans. And that's why we think that this is really exciting. So yeah, it's early stages, and we're in this for the long haul. We really truly believe that, you know, this platform itself will allow for fans to come and communicate with other like-minded fans who love collectibles and we're seeing it. We're seeing it today with the way that they, you know, watch the game the night before and come back to the platform and talk about how cool it was to see that rookie who just scored a goal. And then they anticipate what's coming in collectibles and packs. That's really exciting. So we're trying to provide that platform for fans to come and have that communicative aspect to hockey that, you know, that through this lens of collectibles.
I love the fact that you mentioned two words that stick out to me in terms of the sporting experience, gamify and community. We're seeing those things in different ways. I don't think years ago people thought that a bunch of people would get on, you know, a site and watch other people play video games, but Twitch is massive because of that sense of community. The community is global. What are the opportunities in terms of building some connective tissue between the hockey community globally with an initiative like this?
Yeah, Tom, I think if you just get into product features, that would be a nice setup there.
Yeah, sure. First of all, one of the things that we did with the league was talk to the collectors, right, and talk to the fans and really understand what makes them tick, and making sure that we're not developing anything in a vacuum, right? We want to sort of lean into the things that fans are excited about. And one of the things we heard consistently was the utility of display, right? Being able to show off what I have. And right, we know that really, really well from going to any game in the world, right? You go to a hockey game, it's lit up like the team colors. You just look around the arena. And, you know, I don't care if it's a rally towel, a jersey, a duffel bag, right? We all love our stuff. The idea that it's really hard, right? Donovan, you and I were talking about your backdrop and like the merch that people put behind them on Zoom calls. You know, we're kind of running out of space, right? Or everything's locked in the attic or in the closet. And so We really like the things like virtual trophy cases. Hey, I'm the biggest and baddest Rangers fan. Here's my public URL. Check out my profile. And look at all this content that I've collected. Never seen before angles, maybe, right, of certain plays that we all remember. So that's number one. That brings users together. And then from there, being able to interact with that user, say, hey, this is a really cool piece, right? Would you be interested in doing a trade? Because I have something that I think you might like. So, you know, the collectible, the content is key, right? You want the content to really create a visceral connection back to the experience. But then what you can do with that content becomes extremely social. You know, one gentleman, let's see if I can just find the quick quote, but we released a trading system before we even released the user-to-user marketplace, right? And the feedback, here we go. I mean, if this isn't like connecting it, I don't know what is. Possibly the most fun I've had in the space so far today was nostalgic, like trading hockey cards at recess, right? That's what this platform is all about, bringing people together. And so the idea that you can do a trade, I can hit you up and say, hey, you've got edition number this and I have edition number this. Do you want to connect and trade? Maybe, let's think about it. Maybe if you throw this in, I'll consider it, right? So the trading feature is very, very unique. The league has put in all kinds of opportunities for collectors and fans to sort of get into IRL type experiences. So gamification of set completion, challenges, all that's built in where you can unlock value. It might be something digital that's matched to what you like as a collector. It could be tickets, right? Or it could be hockey experiences. So all that stuff allows you to kind of leverage this new technology, but create like these really meaningful connection points within fans, within the ecosystem. And that's just like scratching the surface on a couple of concepts.
Well, let's dig a bit deeper, because I think what you're mentioning are some of the unique features, the trade lounge, the public profiles. Do you want to go through and just highlight some of the specific unique features and what exactly makes them unique?
Yeah, sure. Let's start with the content. You know, like number one, content's king, right? And you wanna do the work there. And like, to the credit of the league and the commitment that they have to this program and really all the parties involved, right? How we curate and what we put on the shelf for fans to collect is incredibly important, right? That's ultimately like what you're holding, and that's how you flex your fandom. And so lots of effort goes into what we pick. A calibration of significance of the highlight of the play, right, with the meaning of that particular play within the league and within the game. So all that is kind of tied into the overarching philosophy. We want to kind of level up every aspect of what we're doing. So you'll notice when you get something core, it's a core play. If you get something legendary, it's actually legendary in the sport of hockey, right? It's actually tied and calibrated. So that's number one. Number two, really leaning into the gamification elements like set completion unlocks. You can collect, you see what you got in your pack, and then you can freeze. And as part of that freeze, right, you're putting that collectible aside, saying, I'm putting it into the game. And if I can collect all the different pieces of this particular set, I'm going to unlock a never issued before collectible, or maybe I'm going to lock an experience with the league or with a specific team. So set completion, quests, which can be sort of dynamically tailored to you as a collector, is very unique, where we can say, for some reason you love saves and you love goalies, right? Or you like this particular team. You know, we feel very strongly at Sweet that for you to be interested in the quest or a challenge, the more it matches your interest level, right, the much higher uptake we're going to get on people kind of participating, getting into those experiences. Plus, what do you get when you unlock it, right? Is it relevant to what you like as a collector? So all that's very highly calibrated. The trading system was very, very pioneering. No one's launched it before. The idea that, like in the back, you know, the back of the playground, we could flip cards. You can do that here. It's very flexible. You can do it at a broadcast level. So maybe I'm a casual collector and I just want to complete this set because Chris is going to give me some tickets to somewhere, right? I don't necessarily care which edition I get back. I'm just going to say, I've got this Connor McDavid. I'm looking for this, Sidney Crosby back. I'll take any version, any edition. First person that sees that trade and accepts it, that trade takes place. Sweet handles all the very complex stuff that happens on the blockchain, and you're on your way to completing. Or I can do what we call an edition specific trade, where it's like, hey, Donovan, you're holding edition number 62. my favorite number, it's a player's number, whatever it might be, right? I'm going to put a trade request directly out to you. And that's where you can counter and come back. And so lots of depth and flexibility in the way you can trade. And, you know, it's been a 10 out of 10. I don't know how many tens of thousands since we just launched that particular feature trades have happened on the platform. But every single day you wake up and there's things to look at and do and kind of think about when you come into the ecosystem. So those are just a couple of few examples. We don't like to get ahead of our skis and announce what's in the queue because, you know, we want to make sure that we're actually going to, you know, not tweak the roadmap and not say something that we don't ultimately launch. But there's a very exciting Q1 roadmap now that's coming as well that just really expands upon some of these core principles that we're talking about.
I'm sure there's some developers and some programmers that love the fact that you're not too ahead of your skis. So I'm sure they'll give you a big hug after this. So the unique thing for me when I saw this was the acronyms that are involved: NHL, NHLPA, NHLAA, the Alumni Association, groups that have worked together in the past on things like philanthropic initiatives, but working together in terms of business is a bit different. Having all three parties involved in Breakaway, what challenges presented themselves in getting that done? And then thus, what opportunities present themselves moving forward with them all on board?
So we haven't done a ton together, all three of us, on business opportunities, but felt like it was important to do for this type of product, given the fact that you are really melding a lot of current stars, the PA, and stars of yesteryear, right? Retired players, and the Alumni Association, all of us stepping up to put forth what we think is the best product. As time goes on, we're going to continue to market and promote this. And this is definitely a player-driven product, right? People have their favorite teams, but in this case, you know, the highlights, the iconic plays were done by a singular player. So, you know, to have them involved, not only on, you know, an approvals process, but marketing and promotional process, is really powerful. And, you know, to date, I don't think that any of the other leagues have launched such an ambitious, you know, a partnership. It comes with, you know, a lot of approvals, right? You know, and having, you know, to go around the horn and collect everyone's input. But we think in the end, it's worth it, right? You know, this has to be an authentic product to fans. And, those moments, those players, those points in time, you know, have to be well received by fans. And so between all of us, we feel like we have a pretty good sounding board of, you know, what we should be putting out and how. And so far, it's been very smooth.
You mentioned marketing there, and I know that currently and for a while, so much time and energy at the league office level is spent thinking about marketing. And in sports marketing, it's tricky because you have your rabid and loyal fan, you have your casual fan, and you have someone who you hope to convert to a fan. And maybe approaches need to be different for all three constituents. With an opportunity like this, given the digital collectible space, how do you approach those different fans in market hoping to grow the sport?
So I think we're learning, number one, how to target, right, the right type of fan who's going to be right for this type of product. And we have a number of marketing channels, whether it be email or at our events, right? You know, I think there might be more casual fans in email than at our events who are spending money to come to, say, an all-star game. But we think that this appeals to all and everyone in between. I think the price point matters. So we're doing very common packs and sets so that everybody can get involved, and every there isn't a super high price point that would box out, you know, those fans that might be interested but not really sure. That being said, we've got some legendary rarity tiers that will have, you know, tiers meaning, you know, the amount that we actually issue for any particular drop, and of course those will have a higher price point. So avids will obviously be in to collect, because that might be their favorite player, their favorite team. but certainly they understand the value associated. So, you know, it's up to us to continue to make sure that we're appealing to everybody, because that, I mean, accessibility is incredibly important to us from a league perspective. I don't know, Tom, if you have anything else to add.
Yeah, I'll say from a product side, one of the things that we really spend a lot of time doing is ensuring that anybody can jump in at any point and not feel disadvantaged, right? Because that was another thing that we heard loud and clear is like, if you weren't an early participant in XYZ ecosystem, you might as well not even join, right? So for the benefit of the top 10% that have been in it from day one, right, really is a it's a huge hurdle, right, for mass adoption and for like a new participant to come in. So we do what I call like the lazy river approach, right? Where like, doesn't matter where you get on the raft and get in, right? You can participate and you can get the same level of like benefits and rewards within the platform. Doesn't matter where you started floating, right? And so that's a really important part, because we want this to be a place where it's not rewarding kind of like early users or that first cohort, right? And to Chris's point, we're learning what really makes everybody tick. And you know, let's face it, people have different motivations, right? So the guy that was next to me at the Rangers Devils game, long time like Rangers fan, right? He's just a fan, and he just wants his jersey and his duffel bags and his rally towel. And you know, someone like that might really be interested in flexing fandom and trophy cases, okay? Whereas like a collector who might be going to Golden Auction or Steiner Sports, right, looking for the signed Holyfield or Tyson gloves or something like that, right? They're in for a different reason. And so we've really kind of thought through all those different cohorts and how you can't make a product that's like everybody's going to just be happy, right? At some point you got to make some decisions and some trade-offs, but I think we've gone as far as you can push that to ensure that just a fan of the sport finds this very compelling as much as like a hardcore like memorabilia collector. And that's how we set our product up. And it's extremely different than some of the other platforms from that perspective.
Well, I love that you talked about early adopters, because the last thing I'm curious about this platform is the thought around founding fans and what thought went into that. Platforms, when they're starting, are somewhat unique in that they could be set up beautifully and be a great experience, but there is no experience if you go there and there's no one there yet. And it's almost that feeling of standing in line, you know, anxiously to get in a club, and then you get in and you realize that no one's actually inside. How did you think intentionally around what you wanted to do with founding fans? What insights have you gotten from them?
Sure.
And what's that relationship look like?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question, right? And as a product-minded CEO, right, someone that's been doing tech since the mid-90s, number one like sort of product initiative is to understand your users and what they're looking for. So when we launched, right, we didn't want to just say, hey, we're going to flip on the switch. We got it, guys. Like, we figured everything out, right? And here's how the program works. We wanted to invite these users into the conversation. And we didn't want that to be one-dimensional either, right? And so we didn't want to just say, hey, founding fans have this profile. So we broke that up into four buckets and four different unique user types, and really tried our best to make sure we had equal representation of those types of users, right, as a founding fan, and then invited them into the conversation, right? What are some of the things that you want to see in this platform? Here's the first pack opening experience, right? What was the feedback of that? What went well? What didn't go well, right? Oh, it was incredible, but it was a little heavy. It locked my computer, right? Like, you know, so how do we refine that? And then understanding sort of the usability of each feature, like across those four buckets, right? Because maybe like, you know, a standard like everyday hockey fan, right, who never really bought a digital collectible before, they might be confused by the messaging. But this particular user might understand the messaging, but have like a different piece of feedback on sort of the way that the product works. So we love the founding fan concept. It invited those users in, gave them a sense of ownership that they were helping sort of steer this, right? Some of them were very vocal, some of them were very quiet, but we got a chance to really understand Are we on the right track? Where do we turn knobs to optimize this? And how is it resonating, right? How is the messaging, the experience resonating with these particular users? And it's been like a 10 out of 10 experience from that perspective, right? Now we're going live, we're out of beta, and we've got all that feedback. And we've had multiple rounds of optimization and tuning and messaging and feature prioritization, shifting orders of things that we thought were going to launch first, right? Based on all that feedback. So that's how we did it. And the founding fans have been like a very valuable asset, both to the league and to Suite, right? As we brought this to market.
And they've been surprisingly patient. And I say that as fans are not always understanding of a product development roadmap. And we try to be as transparent as we possibly can. I mean, Tom, you know, had made mention of, we got some things launching, we're just not ready to announce it yet. We have a similar take with fans, whether it's on Discord or in social media, to let them know what's coming or that we heard them. And they're appreciative of that. And so I think we've seen a really positive sentiment from the community, which, you know, certainly in the world of social media, you don't always get. But they want this to be a great and thriving place where they can come and interact with other fans. So we're doing our best to make it that kind of a community. And so far, so good.
So you can do a focus group to learn your audience, but that is an imperfect science. What has the rich amount of data that you're getting on your fans, what has that taught you about their fan behavior?
So this product in general, this platform certainly allows us to learn more about fans, the direction of fandom, fan behaviors. Just taking an example, the launch of the Trade Lounge, where we had thousands of trades that were proposed within 24 hours of its launch. And we heard from them loud and clear about which players they were actively involved with and wanting to trade for. That kind of sentiment, you don't necessarily get on social media platforms, right? This is direct input from fans for you know, what makes them tick. And so for that, we find this platform to be very valuable for, you know, this type of data that we can use across a number of products from the league perspective.
Was there an insight that surprised you or challenged your general thinking?
Surprised? No, I think, you know, the fact that there were so many trade requests done in the first 24 to 48 hours was really interesting. And, you know, the product itself is built on a pack based distribution system. So people come and they make a purchase. I think, you know, it over time we'll understand whether players or teams or, you know, perception of value is what moves fandom here. But, you know, I think at this point it's too early to tell. So I don't know that there's anything surprising just yet. I think we're taking it all in and understanding and feeding that back into the product itself.
Yeah, I'll just add that these users know their sport, right? Like if you look at the trade requests that are happening, they're typically smart trade requests, right? Like they know what's good, what's not good, what they're after, what they're not after. And it's interesting to see kind of an affinity for specific teams and players, right? Based on who you are as a collector. So all that is just like kind of more validation data than anything. And the idea that, you know, if you're a fan of a particular team, you're in a certain market, you're going to go after those, right? Highlights in those particular players in a bigger way. So it's been interesting from a volume perspective more than anything, right? How much just like oomph that we've seen on the platform after that feature particularly launched. But I think the data will be really, really valuable and interesting for the NHL for learnings, right? And understanding.
There was quite a bit of anticipation about Bedard and his first goal. So that was not also
no
not
surprise there. Yeah, but
and just hearing you talk about highlights, my question is, what constitutes a highlight on the platform? You know, I can think of some historic goalie fights that I'd love to have. I also know that it's a penalty. Certainly, there's some big hits that some people might want to have, but you know, given the sensitivity around making sure the game is safe, I could see why that necessarily wouldn't be considered a highlight. What are the guardrails in terms of what types of highlights can be on the platform?
So, look, from the league's perspective, we're looking to accentuate the athleticism of the players, showcasing them and their abilities, because these are the best in the world. We're looking at milestone moments, right? Some things that we know are coming, right? I mean, Ovechkin's got some scoring records to break here. And obviously from a historical perspective, the iconic moments, that's what we're trying to highlight as best we can. What sets the NHL apart, makes it special, right? And elicits a conversation or a reaction from fans where they can go back in time and say, oh, I remember that play. I remember that moment. This is why so-and-so won the Hart Trophy, or this is why such-and-such a team won the Stanley Cup, right? Is if we can elicit a reaction from a fan based on some of these highlights that they might have seen over and over and over again, but put into this context, and especially the way that the product's designed with multiple views and vantage points of the same play with sounds of the game, not necessarily recreating the broadcast, but you can hear the ice being carved up by the skates and the puck hitting the stick and the crowd reactions, right? It's all part of that same reaction that we're trying to elicit. So that's, you know, it's there's no particular formula. We just are trying to find the best combination of the best highlights, current and historical, to push out.
Yeah, and again, as I said earlier, focus on the impact of the play, right? What was the significance of the play in that game, in that season, right? For the league, for the team, and making sure that that's calibrated to how it's ranked in the system is super important to us, right? If you find something that's legendary, because on the NHL Breakaway program, it's legendary, you can bet it was an actual legendary moment, right, in hockey. So that's a core part of the way we're doing this. And then one thing, Chris, that just to highlight, the idea of like slow, it's a very fast sport, right? I remember, again, just bringing up my 11-year-old son at Devils Rangers, right? Like we were like standing up at the garden as fast as like goals were being scored. And he was like, I didn't even see it, right? The fact that you can get these highlights and see the different angles and see the little deflection of the puck, right, that just got the goalie sort of off for the goal to go in. It's like, it's literally breathtaking. It's like so, so cool, right? So the content is so important. Calibrating it to what the play meant, calibrating it to the significance of the play, right, in the broader season there of the game, but then giving users sort of a visceral kind of like zoomed in experience, maybe never seen before angles and things like that. Super, super cool. And it really sets it apart. And like, it's a lot of work. I will say, right. You know, the league's got a small team that's like sort of interfacing directly with us to put all this together, but a lot of love and care, right, for your listeners, a lot of love and care and sort of stressing over the details goes into the content, because we want to get the content right. And that's the most important part of the platform.
Congratulations for finding a community that's really engaged. And I just can't wait, given that input, to see where it goes.
Appreciate that.
Appreciate it, Tom.
Thanks so much to Tom and Chris for taking us behind the curtain just a little bit on the development side of NHL Breakaway and of the actual user case of NHL Breakaway as it is presently constituted. If you heard that and you want to use it, guess what? You're in luck. Because for our audience, we have the ability to give away 10,000 packs. All you have to do is go into the description of this podcast right there on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, or if you're listening to this on the radio, thank you. Feel free to find the podcast online wherever you get your podcast, and then go into the description of this episode. Click on the link that we have embedded right there. That will allow you to sign up, register, and start collecting some packs. So go do it. We'll take a break for you to go do that right now. And after the break, we talk about another collaboration once again from the NHL and NHLPA, who work together more often than you think. This time, we're going to highlight the fact that they've been working together to grow the game at the grassroots level for over a decade. That's next on Going Deep.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. Every Saturday night, they sit in their recliners. My grandmother knits. My grandfather screams at the television, and they consume the NHL. And over the last decade plus that they've done that, you've noticed an appreciable difference, not just in the size and skill of the players, but also where the players are coming from, what they look like, even down to who is filling the arena to watch those players play. Now, there are a host of reasons for that. But one of them that isn't maybe talked about because it wasn't public-facing until now is the NHL Industry Growth Fund. And what that is a fund that over the last 10-plus years was contributed to and managed by both the NHL and NHLPA, essentially taking some of the benefit of all of the attention of the game and how well the game is done to create programs and resources that will strategically help grow the game of hockey. So taking that revenue, that profit, putting it back into the game, hoping to generate a bigger game in the future. Now, this is something that has been done throughout both Canada and the U.S., in specific markets. And some of the initiatives, because it sounds nice, a lot of flowery language, what does that actually mean? Some of those initiatives and the money towards it is as such. $33 million with an M to support Learn to Play and First Shift, which is a hockey program that creates opportunities for youth to get excited and involved in the game with some basic hockey skills training. $45 million invested in DEI dedicated programming, including initiatives at the NHL club level, but also girls hockey initiatives. Hockey is for everyone funding and special projects aligned with that. $26 million invested by the NHL and NHLPA in the Future Goals program, which leverages the game of hockey to teach critical science, technology, engineering, math, all of those STEM skills that are really important to students grade 4 and 7, using their love of sport and hockey to get them to understand things that are going to better them for their young futures. And for us here in Canada specifically, the Bauer First Shift program has registered 45,000 players, including more than 15,000 girls. When you total all the work done, that's $180 million in developing programs, creating initiatives, hosting events, providing education, driving awareness to different hockey communities across North America. Which, for me, because I'm process-oriented, makes me wonder, well, how did it start? How has it evolved? And are some of the things it's dealing with and hoping to solve now the same as when it started? If so, why or why not? Well, there are two men who can help me get to the bottom of it. If you have not yet noticed, I dream of questions that I want answered, and then I just get two people to come on the podcast and answer those questions and give me the intel that I desire. In this case, we're going to talk to Chris Campoli from the NHLPA. He is a divisional player representative, and Rob Knarsik, the Senior Vice President of Youth Development and Industry Growth for the NHL. Let's go deep on the IGF, the Industry Growth Fund, and its work over the last 10 years. So, gents, thank you so much for the time, and thank you for being willing to shed light on something that has been ongoing but wasn't as externally facing as maybe some would think. Let's go back to the beginning of the Industry Growth Fund. How and why did it start?
Chris, do you want to tackle this?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Donovan, the Industry Growth Fund started back in the 2012-13 collective bargaining, where, an area we felt we needed to improve on as a league and as an association was growth and a strategy within that. And so we made a proposal to the league, which, I'm proud to say I was at the table for as a member of our negotiating committee, where we proposed the Industry Growth Fund. And, essentially at the time it was $20 million a year, up to 60, now it's 30 million, up to 90. When I say 90, it can't get higher than that at any one time. And there grow the game initiatives, and we've seen it evolve. For me personally, to come around now full circle and be a leader for the association and overseeing the fund and the different organizations and the strategy and the future, quite honestly, the game, it's pretty cool. And it's an amazing position to be in to represent the players that way.
Chris, you mentioned the word strategy. Rob, oftentimes when these initiatives come out from leagues, people first wonder, well, are you doing this to do it, or are you doing this so that you could tell me that you're doing it? This hasn't been something that has really been externally blasted over the last decade. Was that strategic? Why are you now being a little bit more public about that work?
It's a great question. I think our humility as hockey people is an asset and a curse at the same time. I think we wanted to be intentional in the market with getting our teams interested in connecting to kind of a youth environment, new families to our game. And I don't think it's our discourse to brag about us doing the work. I think as we started realizing we're 10 years deep and looked at the numbers, I think it was a time to celebrate and be more on the front foot as opposed to using this information as a reactive mode. So I think now it puts us in a position to understand that we have a responsibility as a professional league, almost as the North Star, to be helping all channels of hockey, whether it be at the pro level, whether it be at the youth level, whether it be at introducing people to our game, making it more available and accessible. We want to show people that we're intentional. So I think now, as we go deeper with the PA, we see this as a better strategy to let the communities know that we're trying to find new fans and people to love our game.
So you found this moment to look back and celebrate, but as you look back and reflect, how has it evolved over time from what was originally pitched, Chris, to now, what you're doing in market and hoping to do moving forward?
It's taken a few different turns. Originally, we looked at and we said, we have no flagship hockey program for kids to access the game. And so we built what's called our Learn to Play program in the United States and our first shift program in Canada. And those are kids from 4 to 9. We now have an entry point into the game at a, affordable price point. As we know, one of the biggest barriers for hockey is the cost of getting into it, and navigating the system. So, we're there to help these young families get into it. From there, we've developed another strategy in that clubs apply. So we go through a pretty rigorous application process where clubs will apply for funding, again, it is pretty rigorous. We'll vet the applications. We want to see that there's a strategy and some thought behind making these programs sustainable for the future, so that one day they can live on their own without the seed capital of the Industry Growth Fund. We're able to go and then support other programs. So between, the Learn to Play, the flagship program, then our club applications, really now, the last 3 years, we've looked at it and said, well, how else can we evolve? And we've got mentorship programs. We've got programs where different organizations apply and we do a Shark Tank style interview with them, and they've got access to capital to grow. We've got our EverFi program, which actually, Rob, you should touch on that. Actually, it's program we started from the beginning. I'll leave that to you. So those are a few things. Rob, you could probably expand on that.
Yeah, I think we have a school-based program, which is called Future Goals, led by EverFi in partnership with EverFi, the PA, and the NHL. And it's really to meet kids where they're at. And instead of going in and just selling hockey, we actually help kids with STEM-based education, things like learning about kinetic energy through dropping a puck, learning about geometry while looking at a rink. And it's all with the intention of saying we can do good by students, and hopefully they'll find the connection and the possibility of trying hockey because they've created this interest. And we've had great success. We've seen well over 3.5 million kids. We've been to 22,000 different schools. And these are the kind of deployments we want to make a lasting impact in our communities. And hopefully people see hockey as a gateway. And one thing I'd like to preface, we're for the next NHLer. We're actually looking to develop and create great citizens of their community that give back. Our game is generally built on the backs of volunteers. So if we can go into marketplaces and help in some capacity, we're hoping that those students at one time might help their fellow colleagues.
The funny thing is, if you were looking to develop the next great NHLers, this would be a real easy program with which to measure how you're doing. We're all sports people. We love a scoreboard. We love stats and numbers. And so what are the key performance indicators? What are the success factors? How do you know what you're doing is actually reaching the intended goal? Is it amount of money committed, or are there other things you're looking to make sure you're on the right track?
Yeah, I think, the elite hockey and that pro hockey player has a really defined path. I think it's very clear what next steps are. I think where we've lost our way a little bit in minor hockey is everyone else, which actually makes the bulk of participation and generally the bulk of fandom. So generally we look at things like brand lift. We look at things like conversion. Is a child that lives through one of our experiences staying connected to their club or continuing to play hockey? We look at different entry points. We design things like, instead of making ice hockey the only form of hockey, we think about things like street hockey or ball hockey that we call it in Toronto. And is there a foray for getting connected by allowing these communities to try ball hockey without the intimidation of going on ice and falling and hurting their elbow and never coming back? Is there different angles to bring them in? So yeah, I think our measurements to date is, you know, we're seeing people connect to our brand. We're seeing people connect to our clubs. And I often say, as Chris does, there's many roads to fandom. I'm trying to build a bigger fan base. I'm not necessarily trying to build the next NHL player, even though I know there have been some that have gone through our Learn to Play program that have become NHLers. I just figure if you build the well bigger, there's more opportunity for everyone, including those that might make pro hockey one day.
What's the impact been on the NHL communities that have been the benefits of some of these programs?
Well, listen, I think with us being a little bit more intentional on some of our investments, we've seen a broader audience, like in Florida per se, with a large population of the Latino community, never really being connected to ice hockey. We support many diverse and inclusive programs there, where you're seeing Florida have a bigger reach, and then you're looking at seems to have a broader mix of inclusion than they once did. So our clubs are reaping the benefits of inviting more people into their building, getting more people to see hockey as a way forward, and being more connected to growing our game. Chris, I don't know if you have more to add to that.
One thing I did want to add to your point about how do we know, you know, are there kids playing hockey? Are they becoming professionals? Maybe a question ago. Well, interestingly enough, Logan Cooley was a participant in our Little Pens program when we launched it. You know, so, I mean, look, do we know for sure? Maybe it's hard to track these kids and where they end up playing, but, you know, Logan Cooley was a participant in our Learn to Play program, which is pretty cool. And he makes his debut, I believe, in the next couple days, you know, so it's an exciting piece. You know that It's making a difference. We are being more intentional on how we're bringing kids and families in, and you know, it's not just about the kids, it's about the parents, it's about that whole experience, bringing them into the ecosystem. Rob talked about the values. I mean, the game means so much to the players. It's given them so much in their lives. We want to be able to share those things, from, you know, teamwork, fair play, respect, communication skills, things that happen on a team that are just so important that you can take with you throughout your life, and they'll help you no matter what you're doing. And those are some of the things we're able to share through this program.
Guys, one of the things, I just want to jump in for 2 seconds. The Devils just announced a gaming initiative. I'm wondering if you can just talk very briefly on kind of some of these unique audiences, even within the club side, that these grants, you know, get to go to. But, you know, we're just not talking ice hockey, yeah, or street hockey or ball hockey. It's this unique touch point.
Yeah, I think we get involved. Again, we start with the premise that we're trying to build fans. And I think, albeit I didn't make it to the NHL, I made it fairly high in hockey. And I think we often use programmatic versions as the only way to building fans. And I think we've got to change the thesis. So we do heavily invest and look for these kind of unique opportunities to invest in technology-based programs like gaming, where if I could ever get my kid out of his bedroom, because I know he's playing these video games and he's connected to hockey and knows more about all the stats and all the players involved. And we need to think differently. It's you know, there are some barriers to playing, which can be cost, access, a variety of things. So are there other channels, if we're using the premise of building fandom, are there other channels to build them? And one of them is either this virtual reality, one of them is gaming, and there's a variety of others that we're testing at the moment. Place, is there an opportunity for a synthetic arena, not a big ice rink, but a kind of a fake ice, so to speak, the synthetic ice? Is there opportunity to be laying things like that around communities and sharing maybe different sports, but giving opportunities for skating as well?
And lastly, I want to acknowledge the amount of investment over a long period of time is not insignificant. And I see it all the time on our website. Most read articles are, where's the cap going? What's the number going to be? And in the comments, the term escrow is basically a swear word. So I understand from both sides. You could have said, well, maybe this made sense back then, but this is a large amount of money. Do we help the margins of our owners or help increase the cap for the players? Why, both from the NHL and the NHLPA side, this is an endeavor with the Industry Growth Fund that gives return on investment?
I'll say this. In this area, we are not adversaries. We both, you know, we want more kids playing the game. We want to grow the game. We want to grow revenues, of course. It's a business, you know, and that's good for the players. That's good for the owners. And so we're committed, you know, together to doing those things. So whether it's players engaging in programs, you know, club programs, we're acquiring fans, and it is a calculated growth strategy. And really, that strategy didn't exist before the IGF. So without it, you know, I wonder often where we would be today. And so because of the IGF, it gives us an opportunity of a brighter future and an exciting one. You know, from a player's perspective here.
Yeah. You know, from our perspective, similar to what Chris said, we call it the and but for fund. Like, and but for IGF, some of these things might not have happened. And one of them that really comes to mind is, we see ourselves being far more intentional at trying to attract a new audience and a younger audience. What's next? And if we don't learn to pivot and be fluid with what we're selling, what they're consuming, I'm afraid we're going to be lost in this process. So I think this is a way for us not to just wish and hope on a strategy that people are going to come and think that all markets are like Toronto. There are lots of markets that have to work for their fandom. And there are lots of markets, you know, like a Tampa, where you see them so heavily invested in community. And as a result, get a lot of community participation. So we know the future is in this kind of younger generation. They want to be led with purpose. They want to be led with opportunities. They want to be led with access and to anchor to something. And, you know, ultimately, on a selfish and personal note, Again, although I never made the NHL hockey, I owe everything to hockey. Like, I was able to get a wonderful education. I was able to learn life skills. I want to share that with a variety of people in the community to say, you know, the skills that Chris mentioned, whether it be dedication, resilience, having to fall down, learning to deal with a loss, learning to celebrate a win humbly, like all those traits I see brought into my business life. And I really owe a debt of gratitude to what hockey has helped and done for me.
Well, as you guys continue to do the work, I'm looking forward to covering the volunteers that are supported by it, the fans that are fostered from it, and an unintended consequence, but a positive one, the potential players that are created from it. So thank you both for doing the work and for sharing what it's been like.
Thanks, Donovan.
Thanks so much to Rob and Chris for the information and the education and the hard work that they've put into this over the last 10 years. Feel free to share this to someone who might benefit from knowing that these programs exist and there are resources in NHL market cities that are available to them. Also, feel free to like, favorite, share, and subscribe this podcast, because like it or not, that's how these things are judged. So any support and feedback is much appreciated. Thanks for listening.